This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. You will all recall the Russian anti-satellite test last year. Bob Zimmerman, who keeps the website Behind the Black, is here to underline the fact that the bad acting from Moscow is across a vast landscape, including near-Earth orbit. And this increasingly will be an issue if we are indeed in a conflict now with the Kremlin and all of its policies, not just about Ukraine, but about everything else as well. Not quite a Cold War, but certainly questions raised about the cooperation that's been in place for decades with Roscosmos. Bob, a very good evening to you. What satellite test? Remind us, please.
All right. In mid-November, the Russians launched a missile designed to hit a satellite. And the satellite, and it was a test to see if they could do it. And the missile was aimed at a defunct Russian satellite that was in an orbit just slightly higher than ISS. And it hit it, and it produced several thousand pieces of debris, several multi-thousands pieces of debris. Right after the test, NASA had the astronauts, both Russian and American, go into safe mode. They actually implemented safe haven procedures, closing the hatches to parts of ISS and sheltering in their Soyuz and Dragon spacecraft, lifecraft, in case something hit. And since then, they've managed to track all these pieces. The Russians continue to claim it's not a problem. They're lying. The orbit, because it was slightly higher than ISS, ISS will maintain the height of its orbit. These will not be maintained, so the debris will slowly decay into ISS's orbit. The story, though, update we have now is that at a presentation by a NASA official at a conference this week, they indicated that the further tracking of all the debris suggests that it's this one anti-satellite test doubled the overall chance of some space junk hitting ISS, doubled the chances. And basically what they say is, let me give the actual numbers. It doubled it from one chance to 25 to 33,000 orbits. In other words, every, 30,000 orbits, you might get one hit. It's now, that's what it is now. Before, it was about one hit in every 50,000 orbits. And ISS does about 6,000 orbits a year. So this means in about every 4 to 5 years, you have a real solid chance of a hit. Now, I got to tell you, according to these numbers, the actual overall threat is not that serious. The Russians are right. It's quite manageable. NASA and defense industry people want to gin this up, and I will agree. I've said the same thing. It's a terrible threat, and it shouldn't have been done by the Russians. It's not that big a threat when we think about it. Nonetheless, the Russians, that test was entirely irresponsible. They could have targeted something else, and their test violated the Outer Space Treaty. And so it indicated that they're willing to do things that are threatening to us. And that brings us to my second story, John. Let me segue right into it. NATO has issued a new policy for how it will deal with space and space threats. Now, I have an analysis of that space policy on Behind the Black. And this is in response to Russian and Chinese activity in space, some of which is very clearly not friendly. The space policy, though, when you actually read it, my response to it is it's filled with blather. Basically, it's got a great deal of bureaucratic language that essentially says this very simple thing. Space is important. NATO's enemies threaten our assets in space, and NATO recognizes these effects. That's it. And then they outline how they want to do things, but it's written in this really politically blathery, complicated bureaucratic language that basically pumps it up, and so they say very, very little. It's essentially they're saying they want to maintain their interest in space and pay attention to what other nations are doing. And therefore protect our assets in space. It's a very vague policy statement. It does indicate they want to work with commercial space to do all this stuff, and they want to work with commercial space voluntarily. In other words, not force commercial space to do anything. But it's just the language made me worried because it seemed weak. And a reflection of that is the response of the Russian Foreign Ministry almost immediately after the policy was announced. Their response was not this vague bureaucratic language. Their spokeswoman was very blunt, branding it as slanted and incendiary. That's the NATO policy. And let me quote, the document is one-sided, in effect, incendiary, as it is based on destructive beliefs of the U.S.-led NATO members who have an important role in space. What I suspect the harsh and strong language from Russia indicates that looking at the NATO policy, they've decided NATO is weak at this point, and therefore they're responding strongly, and they're going to push as hard as they can to see how much they can get away with.
Artemis Accords, what are they, Bob? Israel's approved.
Yes, Israel has become the 15th nation worldwide to sign the Artemis Accords. The Artemis Accords were created by the Trump administration as a bilateral treaty between the United States and individual other nations, whereby those nations will agree to certain principles protecting property rights and investment in space, basically the legal framework of Western capitalism, in exchange for being able to partner with us in our Artemis project to try to get back to the moon and explore the solar system and build bases on the moon and elsewhere. And we've got 15 nations now signed. Israel joins this whole collection of other nations, including the United Arab Emirates. Israel and the United Arab Emirates are right now jointly working on a moon project, by the way, which indicates, you know, once again, we've got a really, the U.S. now has a really good consortium of nations that support the idea of private enterprise in space and are willing to bypass the Outer Space Treaty's limitation thereof. It is interesting still that both Russia and China oppose this for obvious reasons. They don't like private enterprise and property rights in space. They prefer to have a top-down authoritarian system. The lack of both France and Germany to sign at this point suggests that maybe their politicians from these capitalist countries are reconsidering their commitment to free enterprise because they haven't signed it. And that means when they get to space, they might just team up with the Russians and Chinese in opposing free enterprise.
There's a peculiar battle going on in the subcontinent. As I understand it from your reporting, Bob, India and Pakistan are going in one direction. SpaceX is going in another. This is Starlink itself. What is OneWeb?
Okay, well, we have two different companies building satellite constellations to provide global internet access to everyone, especially in the rural areas. OneWeb is one, and SpaceX's Starlink is the other. They're competing with each other. OneWeb went into bankruptcy and then was purchased by a consortium, a partnership made up of a Indian investment major private group called Bharti, and a partnership with the United Kingdom, the government of the United Kingdom. So OneWeb has direct links with industry within India. Well, two stories this week indicate there really might be some political influence in connection with OneWeb's links to India that is helping OneWeb and hindering SpaceX. Pakistan has now joined India in blocking SpaceX from selling pre-orders in their country. Pakistan has said that SpaceX has not yet gotten its permits or licenses to sell those pre-orders to customers, and so they must stop doing so. And meanwhile, India has done the same thing, so SpaceX cannot enter that market right now on the Indian subcontinent. But OneWeb this week signed a deal with the U's to provide internet service in the Indian subcontinent. And it appears to me that U's already has an agreement and licensing in India to do this. OneWeb doesn't do it to individual people. What OneWeb does is it provides its internet service to larger operations such as companies, businesses, telephone companies, airlines, and in some cases they can then redistribute that service to individuals. And either way, they have now signed a deal to provide that service beginning this year. And it strikes me that OneWeb's links, both political and economic, to India might very well be tilting the scale in their favor politically in this battle competition to provide service to the subcontinent.
Radian, that's a new name to me, Bob. What do they want to do?
Well, Radian is a new name to me as well, John. They've been in stealth mode for the last year or so as they've been gearing up. They're a very small company still. They have less than 20 employees. But their concept is to build a single stage to orbit space plane, kind of like what the X-33 was supposed to be that failed in the 1990s, that government project, boondoggle. And they have now raised $27.5 million in private investment capital to fund the development, the initial development, seed money, essentially, of this space plane. It appears that their chief technology officer was an engineer player when they were trying to build the X-33. And he claims in this announcement that the technology and the advancements is in the subsequent 20-25 years since X-33 failed, makes it possible now to do a single stage to orbit space plane that can land like an airplane and take off like an airplane. And so that's what they say to do. This is in development. It's very beginning. So I wouldn't put a lot of money behind this at the moment. They also joining 100+ other startups trying to enter the orbital rocket market. If they succeed, though, they will have an advantage because they will be completely reusable in a single stage landing on a runway and taking off on a runway.
Capitalism in Space, I read from your report, Bob. A ground test, upper stage ABL Space Systems exploded. Anomaly. What is ABL Space Systems?
ABL is one of those 100 startup rocket companies, small sat rocket companies, that's trying to get into the business of launching the many, many small sats that we expect to launch in the next few years. And they had a rocket, they called it the RS-1, that they hoped to launch late in the last year or early this year. They were doing a test of the upper stage of that rocket this week. It was a ground test. We don't have many details of what they were actually testing, either engine or tanks. But either way, there was what they called an anomaly, which is basically an explosion. The thing blew up. We don't know anything more. No one was hurt, but they've released few details about what's happened, including what they were testing. I suspect it was a pressure test of the tanks, and the tanks failed. But I'm guessing there. It could have been an engine static fire test. We just don't know. This is certainly going to delay their first launch, which they hope to do in January. And so we'll have to wait and see how it goes, John.
One detail, Bob, about NATO, because I wanted to get on to the good news as well. NATO is implicitly acknowledging that space is militarized in asking for assistance. It is a defensive organization, but it's built on military power.
Yes, that's exactly right. They are basically saying that there is a military threat to our assets in space coming from other players. They don't name them, but we both know it's Russia and China, and therefore we must take action to protect those assets. And then they're very vague about what they'll do. Basically, it's policy statement.
Right, right. I just wanted to acknowledge the fact, Bob, because of the treaties of the 20th century, that we're back into the gray zone, the fog of war in space. Bob Zimmerman. He keeps the website Beyond the Black. We're going exploring next. We're going to the surface of Mars. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.